welcome to Souls on Fire with your host, Joe Trainer. Joe is a husband and father of three, and for 29 years was an award-winning and very successful college football coach. Today, he is the director of athletics for Pope John Paul II High School. He is a leader, a man of character, and filled with the joy of the Lord. Joe was running for God's heart and became a soul on fire. Listen in every Monday as Joe interviews other sports figures and businessmen and women who bring their faith into the marketplace. And now, here's Joe Trainer.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Souls on Fire. Great to be back with you. Hopefully you had a great weekend. Caught my first Phillies game this weekend. Was not a good result at the end, but there's nothing better than going down to Citizens Park and seeing a game and the crowd. It was electric. It was a great experience. Got a great show for you, folks. As always, Andy Criscolo. He wears a lot of hats. Part copywriter, part advertiser, part journalist, part-time musician, but he's Bryn Mawr's finest. He's also known as the Mainline Menace. We'll get to that story. But before we begin the program with Andy, as we always do, let's begin in prayer. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen.
Heavenly Father, as Andy and I spend the next hour in faith and fellowship, we ask that our thoughts be your thoughts, that our words be your words, and then when we leave here tonight, that our deeds be your deeds. In Jesus' name, we pray. Andy Criscolo, welcome to the program, brother.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me on. This is great.
This is going to be awesome.
I like your theme music.
I love it. Yeah. He who sings praise twice. We'll talk about that. And that's kind of one of the themes I want to talk about with Andy this week. He's an accomplished songwriter. Musician himself, spent most of his adult life writing or part of a band, and the power of music. We'll talk about that, and Andy's got great insight that he's going to give us. And how can that have a profound impact on the faith journey? Because I know music really. I never considered myself. I probably went to 15 to 20 concerts, but as far as music aficionados, I've never been that can't live without it type of guy. But music, worship music, Christian music, K-Love Radio, it's all had a profound impact on me in the later years, really in the last 3 to 4 years, I think, as I've tried to kind of put some nuggets out there for my own kids and try and make their faith journey as relevant as possible. But, Andy, we're going to have a great time here. Your story is amazing. But before we get into the present day, just take us back to, you're a New Jersey native, Bergen County guy, born and bred. But talk about your family coming up, Westwood High School, and then to BU, and then the move down to Philly. Bring us through those early years.
Well, yeah, I was born in northern Manhattan up there near the Cloisters, and we moved out to Westwood, Bergen County, went to Westwood High School, played sports here, and, a lot of stuff on the playground, out in the streets with my friends and stuff like that, a little soccer, a little track, nothing too spectacular. I was the same height as I am now.
Like what are you, 6'6"?
I think I'm 6'5". I had a double knee replacement about 6 years ago.
I lost
an inch there, but...
That's right. I'm a midget. I'm 5'5", so I can't. Yeah. You tower over me.
I was probably 200 pounds lighter though. I was Ichabod Crane. Football was actually my thing, but I just didn't really think about it because there was one moment where the high school coach, I think I had a flannel shirt on, so I looked, I had the shoulders, but everything else was like a scarecrow.
Sure.
And he goes, "Yeah, you should come out for the team." I'm like, "Yeah, I don't know," But I could throw the ball. I could throw the ball pretty well. But it wasn't until I got to college and the RA at our dorm happened to be the offensive coordinator, a guy by the name of Buddy Tevens, who's right now is, he He's a legendary
Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Dartmouth All-American quarterback, and now coach there for years. He's also doing amazing things. He had gone to the engineering department, came up with this idea of the tackling dummies, where they
the ones that are movable. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and he's at the Manning camp and everything like that. He's a superstar. And but he would see me out on the street at BU throwing the football, like all hours of the day and night. And at one point, sometimes my brain just shuts off, and I thought, I wonder if I could hit the top window of the dorm. And I threw the ball right through the window.
I've been to BU, too. Those dorms are pretty high up.
He was pretty pissed because he happened to be sitting in the room. He's like, what the hell is wrong with that? I'm like, I don't know. But he came up to me, junior year already, and he's like, he's got that Boston accent. You throw it a rock pretty well, Why don't you come out for the team? I'm like, I don't know. I'm junior in college. And he goes, no, come out. So he trained me all winter. We would go to the gym, and he's got me – doing stuff. And I had it's a real short story. I went to one practice, I showed up, and we did running. We did a 12-minute run, and then everybody's huffing and puffing because nobody was really keeping up with their running. They were and then they're like, okay, now we're gonna do we'll do another mile and a half. You gotta sprint the straightaways, jog the turns. And anyway, the highlight of my career was the next day I was walking through the door, one of the buildings, and one of the other coaches, I don't know who he was, but he came up to me and goes, hey, you look pretty good out there yesterday. I'm like, really? Okay. The next week I went in, I had a physical, the guy starts sitting on my foot, he's manipulating my leg, he's like, what's wrong with your knee? I said, nothing, the knee's fine. He goes, no, it's loose, there's something loose in there. I said, last year I was chasing my brother around the house in the wet grass, and I did something to
it. Felt something, yeah.
Yeah, and, I went to an orthopedist, and at that time, they didn't know what the hell they were doing with it. And he goes, well, you could get it operated on. And, pretty soon it was fine. I'm running or whatever, and they never did anything with it. But they wouldn't prove me for contact.
I got
that
you.
Was the end of it.
So growing up in Westwood, who were some of your faith influences in the house and in the community?
Well, certainly my parents. They both went to Catholic school. Mom on the east side of Manhattan, St. Monica's, and my dad was... very, very devout guy. And so started with them. I was an altar boy. Interesting experiences there. But later on, I got involved in this search for Christian maturity. It was a group of teens. It was run by the parishes up in North Jersey. And
Multi-parishes,
yeah. So every parish would do stuff. During the week, they'd have, meetings. Sometimes they had things called lock-ins where you'd stay overnight. And the kids, the teenagers were into it because it was sort of like, you get to meet other people.
Sure.
You could talk to girls, this and that, the other thing. And then there would be these larger gatherings up in West Havistraw. There's a seminary up there.
Yeah.
And you'd go away for the whole weekend. And there's a whole thing involved there where you'd sit and listen to talks and there'd be music. And,
was it like a retreat mentality for
retreat mentality? The guys were on one side. It was like barrack style and the girls were on the other side. And then you'd come together and there was mass every night and, an indoctrination, but in a great way. And then you'd come together on Sunday and your parents would come up or they'd have things that people write you letters. They call palancas. And so you'd get these letters on Saturday night from all these people you didn't know. All of a sudden just... because he didn't know about it. It was a surprise. But there's people telling you, how they feel about you, how much they love you. And it's a very emotional thing. And then, you come walking out on Sunday morning to Mass. And I remember my mother's, saying, oh, they're all arm in arm wearing flowers in their head. They look like hippies. And what have they done? So the weekend is 3 days.
And you met your wife at one of those, right?
Well, I met my wife through that. Yeah, I met her brothers. Brothers were guitar players and stuff like that. She had three older brothers, and I became friends with them. Subsequently met her there. Her parents were very involved. They had a prayer meeting at their house every Monday night. A little house in Dumont, New Jersey. They'd have 60 kids coming in.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. And, just some of the same fellowship stuff. And
Let me ask you this. You know, you have college age girls. I have college age sons and a high school daughter. You know, you worry about, I really think, like, even, you know, the village, even then, like, right, I'm wearing the same cohort. The Catholic village was kind of raising the Catholic kids, right? Now,
right.
And then I think, you know, somewhere along the way, there was a detachment, you know, and now the onus and that responsibility fell, I think, pretty much on our shoulders. And I don't know. I'm not making any excuses or anything. But I felt like those opportunities for engagement, Catholic engagement. Yeah, obviously, you had CYO sports, and that could handle a certain part of it. But you know, there were so many opportunities to be mentored by other strong Catholic people outside of your parents. And I just feel like, you know, that I don't know if that's lost or that's just I haven't done a good enough job of finding it or what. But I just feel like sometimes as the parishes have taken on different, you know, kids have 1,000 other things they can do,
well, that's,
you know, which is a problem. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that there's, I mean, you know, we happen to live in a great parish at St. Thomas Villanova.
Absolutely.
And there's stuff going on for kids. But it is a much more fragmented life as a kids growing up. We were just talking about it before we started. And, you know, it's the phones just make it impossible for kids to just detach and breathe and let something come in, you know, original thought or creativity or just sort of problem solving. And and it's also the helicopter generation, you know, we went out and we did whatever we left in the morning and came back later at night, and parents didn't know where the heck we were.
Sure.
And you know, and now it's like kids have to, you know, be driven everywhere and everything's arranged and stuff like that.
No
so
doubt.
It's
now, have you guys, you moved down to Philly in what, early 90s, right?
93, 90? Yep.
Yeah. Now, did you go right to St. Thomas of Villanova Parish right then?
Yeah. Yeah. My wife, so I had met my wife at those prayer meetings, and she had gone to DeSales University, studying musical theater. She got a full ride for acting at Villanova.
Wow.
And that's where she met Father Peter. They were acting together and doing things. And that's where she met Steve McWilliams, our friend, who connected us.
Absolutely. What an amazing order Father Peter is. Huh? I mean, he's amazing. I met him in 1997 when he was just a faculty. I'm not saying just a faculty member,
right,
but before his rise into
into
leadership and what he's done at Villanova, you know, kind of taken really a regional, well-respected Catholic university into an international, you know, just phenomenal, you know, incredibly well-connected place. I mean, he's an amazing guy, and he's an amazing leader, Father Peter.
Yeah, well, I mean, rule number one for me, I got to be able to hear you, you know. I was talking about a priest that I knew growing up, and he was a wonderful orator and homilist as well. And, you know, first thing is the voice comes, you know, flowing
catches
down.
Catches your attention.
Yeah,
right?
It's just like it pulls you in. You're not, you know, not going to let you sit back. And then just great stories, humor, you know, relatable things. I mean, he's wonderful, and a lot of the fathers over there are great as well.
And we were talking also too. I mean, I know now and then when my kids are back from college, even my daughter, like she's a junior at Lansdowne Catholic, like. There'll be Sundays, you know, we get up and we're going to church saying, I'm going to go to Villanova. I'm going to make the 14-mile drive down to Villanova with some of our friends because the juice and even there's certain priests that are just off the charts. Father Rob Hagen, obviously Father Peter. There's a ton of great ones, but like you never have a bad one.
No.
You know, and then I think to me, you know, we'll get into your, you know, the music component, but like, what music can do for a worship service.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. I mean, it's just the energy and like, you know, to me, you know, and again, I've said this a number of times on this show, like, you know, a friend of mine called me out a while ago about wanting to be stimulated, so to speak, in mass. Because that's not why we go. We go because you're seeing right. the ultimate miracle take place, you know, that takes, you know, the same miracle that I witness every Sunday and every day that I go to church during the week. Like, it's the same one that's taking place in Italy and Africa right. and France and Germany and, you know, Belgium and, you know, South America, you know. But man, is it, if the music is on point and you have a great homilist, you just come out of there literally with your hair on fire about the Lord.
It helps. And, you know, it's like you said, you know, even, you know, I've been to some, you know, my parents live in Northern Virginia. It's a different world down there. I've been to some places where I didn't like the message at all. It was very, you know, like what about, where's the love part? I'm not hearing that, you know, yeah. I'm hearing about.
Yeah, the finger pointing.
We're going to war. Yeah. And I'm like, no, that's not what I want to hear about, you know. But yeah, no, it's, I remember being on vacation in Aruba and my wife and I going into a mass and it was said in Spanish and, but you know what's going on, you know, you can follow the whole thing.
Absolutely.
And it does sort of hit you like
the universal nature.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. So you graduate from BU, great school yeah. academically,
yeah.
and then you spent some of those early adult years living in a rectory, right?
Well, yeah. So, yeah, well, I graduated in 83 and I got home. My parents moved. They moved from Western Springfield, Virginia. My father's company, they moved the entire company from New York to D.C. And they were around for part of the summer. And they said, are you coming with us? And I said, I want to try and, you know, be around my friends.
Sure.
You know, I got a job at the last minute at WOR Radio in New York. So that was like, that was that. So the first year I rented a room in Rutherford, you know, just a room.
Yep.
I mean, the shower head was hitting me, you know, about chest high. It was
built for guys like me.
Yeah. I mean, I was, you know, I was going to the local deli and bringing my dinner in every night. I was just like, okay, this is not good. So, Father John Ryan was the guy, priest at St. Andrew's, again, that wonderful order I was talking about. Anyway, he had moved on to Our Lady of the Valley in Orange, New Jersey. In a gigantic, you know, I don't know how old it was, but a beautiful building, Spanish tile, you know, in a rough neighborhood, and they were there serving the people. You know, there was a tremendous need. There were a lot of poor, and he was a great guy. And you know, because the parish didn't have a lot of money, they would rent rooms out, and they might have rented out 10 or 15 rooms in this place.
Yeah, I'm sure back then those rectories were housed, you know, at one point they were housing probably 15 to 18 people.
Absolutely. But now it's, you know, it's guys that there was some guys that were sort of down on their luck, or they might have had dealing with alcohol problems or just recently separated or something like that. There was a missionary came in from Ireland, and so it was like a little community. We'd all meet and have dinner, and there was a guy that made food, and I had a beautiful suite of rooms across the top of the building. You know, it was a living room and this and that. And everything was good. But, you know, fitting in at the rectory is not always the easiest thing in the world. You know, I would go to sleep at night and, you know, I'd like to listen to music before I go to sleep. And I put my headphones in and I'd, like, turn on, like, AC/DC, you know. It's like, you shook me all night long. And I would forget to turn the dial to headphones. So it's 1 a.m. and it's like, wah,
sure.
You know, the next thing I know, I sense there's somebody in the room, and it's one of the other priests, you know, this other very kind of hyper sort of, he was a character, Father Lipnicki, and he'd come in and his tidy whities is just like, and I'm like, what the hell, what's going on here? And he's like, the music. I'm like, and I take the headphones off, and it's, I'm like, oh my God. I said, Father, I'm sorry. I forgot to do it. But I did it like, I did it 3 or 4 times.
Now, how long did that, the rectory experiment last?
What was that? Probably two or three years.
That's a long time.
It was a long time. Maybe not 85, 86. Yeah, maybe, yeah. It could have been 2 or 3 years. Well, okay. It was, you know, like I said, good set of rooms. I had a hot meal every night, and, you know.
Was there an expectation?
And Mass was right there. There was expectations, which I found out.
Yeah.
I remember sitting at dinner one day, and Father Ryan says to our cook, he goes, Andy owes money. He's late on his payment. If he doesn't have it by tonight, you can tell him to leave. So I'm like, so I go up, okay. You know, I knock on the door. I'm like, I said, what's going on? He goes, I thought I would hear from you. I thought you'd hang out and we would talk a little bit or whatever. You just come in, you're just using it like a, and I'm like, okay, I didn't, you're right. You know, I kind of just was doing my own thing. Sure. And, you know, that's not what it was about. It was about, you know, fellowship, you know, everybody sort of being part of it. So that was, you know, hey, you know, it was a harsh way. Hey, it's Catholic, right?
Absolutely.
You know, it's going to be tough.
No doubt. Nobody extorts better than us Catholics, no. Right? That's amazing. Now, your music, so yeah. You were, who instills this passion early on for you? Was it just like, you have what, three brothers?
Two brothers and a sister. Yeah.
So did everyone have kind of the same affinity for music? Or?
It was primarily my brother Stephen and I. He was a year and a half younger.
He still does some stuff with you.
Sometimes he lives in he's down in South Carolina now, but okay. But he was the drummer, and you know, it started my dad was a big my dad was born in 1932. He's a big swing guy, you know, Benny Goodman and all those guys.
Did you watch Lawrence Welk growing up or what?
We watched Lawrence Welk. I mean, a little bit. Actually, I've been watching it now just kind of get
hilarious.
A kick out of it.
It's
unbelievable. Yeah. He used to listen to a guy, Bob Servilio, on the radio from Dover, New Jersey, on Saturday nights. This is Bob Servilio, and he would play, you know, everybody, and Tex Beneke and Glenn Miller and this and that. And, you know, my father's like, you know, I'd go through the room, and he's like, come here, sit, just listen, you know. So anyway, you know, I would listen because I wanted to, you know, share that with him. And, of course, now, you know, years later, he's gone. So it does, you know.
Yeah, you look back on that.
Yeah,
you
hear those songs and it means something. But he would take us out. Like, there was still guys from the Benny Goodman Quartet still over. Like, Lionel Hampton would play at the local high school. Or Teddy Wilson. You know, we went and saw them. And so, you know, that part of it there. And he was a drummer, my dad.
Oh, he was? Okay.
Yeah, he played the drums. And he was an usher in New York. And he was, you know, he had sort of two lives. Growing up, he was kind of, his parents had... unusually had divorced early. My grandfather was a longshoreman. My grandmother was an aspiring actress. But he ended up getting raised by his great aunt, who was blind, him and his brother. And so they were like wild, wild kids. They were like all of us, you know.
Sure.
Running around in the junkyard, down
raising
by the railroad,
really.
Raising
yeah.
themselves. And, you know, my father, it wasn't until he went into the Army that he sort of had a conversion
sure.
of some kind. Because, you know, my father was always very, like, you know, kind of strict and this and that. And then we'd meet his friends and they're like,
who's this guy?
Well, my uncle would say, your father used to beat the heck out of me. You know, he was bad. You know, I'm like, what? You know, come on, Dad. Let's get this guy over here. He's, you know, he's in a prayer pose. And,
so it was you and your brother growing and your
father.
Yeah,
me and my brother, yeah. My mom worked at a town country music in Westwood and... She got me my first electric guitar and my first amplifier, which I still have. It's a big tube amp. And
are you involved in any of the music presentation at the parish?
No, there was one summer when we were up here. One summer we went in. I was talking to the director there, not the lead guy, but sort of the guy that was in charge in summer, and we just. Just too busy is the excuse, but it is something that I want to, you know, I talk about doing. So
yeah, I mean that parish is electric too. I mean,
oh yeah, the music's unbelievable. Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah, it's all good. We like going to the Sunday night things because it's just unbelievable.
Now, what
choir.
Is that? Is that are all those are all the? If you look at the rectory for St. Thomas of Villanova,
yeah.
is it mostly Villanova priest?
I think
like who performs yeah. down at the church? Who is it mostly Villanova priest or the one designated pastor?
The McChapel has sort of their own group there, and then there's some back and forth between them.
Yeah.
It's different. A little bit different at you know, I mean, Father Peter's up at the
yeah. You said Father Peter married you, right?
He did. He did, yep.
That's, and he baptized one of your daughters?
Yeah, Isabel. He says he gave her the lion, his signature Lion King moment.
Yeah, picked the baby up.
Picked her up, and she's 7 feet in the air, and yeah. it was spectacular. And everything he does is, you know, it's a dramatic flair, but you know what? It's high drama, and it's good to be reminded. There's something, you know, a sacrament, there's something special going on there.
No doubt. And that's well said. I mean, it is special. And when you're able to share in the magnitude of the celebration, right? We've been to sacraments where there's, there's more of a perfunctory matter of factness to the celebration. And certainly that's, it's still a sacrament and it's amazing, but man, when you feel like you're at a celebration or a spectacle, it really you feel like just taking the high five in the baby or high five in the confirmed or, certainly weddings and all the different sacraments that we partake in. But it's like, hey, welcome to the family. You know, you feel like it's just this big celebration.
Yeah. And that's what you want. I mean, I knew what it was like growing up, in church, before. We had great, all of a sudden we got all these cool priests that came in when we were teenagers. And when we were younger, it was just sort of like regular church. And you'd sit there, you'd be bored, you'd fall asleep as kids. And you'd straighten up and pay attention and you'd pick it up. And I went to Catholic school for the first 4 years. So, you got some of that indoctrinated. But once you've been exposed, between like search and, being part of, music there and learning songs and, it helped me learn the guitar and everything like that and singing. And then the experience continues at a place, at a parish down here like this. You're like, how are you going to keep them down on the farm when they've had, tremendous celebrations like that?
Yeah, and I think when I go to church with my own children, 22, 20, and 17, nothing's cooler for me than to leave church and you see them moved by the experience, whether, and not even just a sacrament or, partaking in a baptism or a confirmation but when you come out of there and they have their hair on fire a little bit and cause the priest and the environment, just tapped into them,
Well, because they're going to need it
100%
down the line. And it's the greatest gift you can give them because it's
literally the greatest gift you can give them. Yeah. That is so well said.
And when you see the uptake, it's like, okay, I'm doing something right. And it's that feeling you get when you feed your kids or something, or you do anything for them, and they're sick and you whatever. But this is the medicine that never goes away. So
I tell my kids once a week. I say, hey, I fail you 50% of the time. I say, I fail mom.
You're doing
55% good. 55% of the time.
I'm probably 80%.
But I said, God never fails, And I say, hey man, one of my favorite lines is I say it a bunch is, I never knew God was all I needed till God was all I had. And at some point, you're going to be alone, And even now more than ever with young kids, and we've never had more devices to connect, but there's never been more loneliness for young people than there is in today's climate. And and sometimes it's God alone that you're standing there with.
Well, it because that's what, and I'll say it sometimes, and my wife's like, stop being scaring them, but which I tend to do. She's right to tell me to back off sometimes, but yeah, the reality is there comes the moment. It's you can call it being in a foxhole. Hopefully they're not going to be in foxholes, but when you're on your deathbed, you're alone, you're not going to be worried about any of this other stuff.
You're going to be thinking
how do I, what do I feel? Do I feel hopeful? I'm afraid, but is my faith strong? And looking for signs of faith, and that's what it is. When you hit you hit 60. And you start losing people, and death is now some. Your grandparents die. Sad, this and that, and the other thing. But not until you. I was fortunate. Didn't get touched close to my dad. And he was older. It was like, oh, of course. But it's different when you know, then it becomes real.
No doubt. You know, you spend all those years going to weddings, and now you're spending all these years going to funerals.
Yeah.
Of contemporaries, of people in your cohort. Man,
that's
crazy. Folks, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll be right back with Andy Criscola, and we'll get to the Mainline Menace, which he's affectionately referred to up and down the main line here.
My name is Mario Diadamo, and I have been a faithful listener to Inner Sign Radio Ministry since 1990, and to Kathleen McCarthy as principal host since 2007. Hearing the witness of Kathleen and her guests has contributed greatly to my spiritual growth. They have educated me about the tenets of my Catholic faith by presenting lay and religious leaders to discuss topics that help listeners create an informed Catholic conscience. I always encourage people who are in need of prayer and companionship to listen, call in, and become part of our radio listener family by joining thousands of other people praying for your intentions. I personally can attest to the power of the prayers from the ministry. Kathleen often reminds her listeners that you are never alone because the Lord is always with us. Through this Catholic radio and internet apostolate, the Lord is indeed with us in a very tangible way. Please share the good news as Kathleen takes a leap of faith and expanding to a two-hour program to reach many more people who need to experience the love of God. Thank you.
My friends, it is you who have stood lockstep with us in underpinning our apostolate by your powerful prayers and sacrificial financial giving. We have no doubt that you surely are the angels the Lord said he would send to us, and we are forever grateful. These are urgent times, and we need to proclaim the truth of God's word, which alone can set us free. And we need to bring the Lord's healing power, love, and mercy out to a world that is in such desperate need. As your local Catholic radio apostolate, we are humbled and mightily blessed to have your loyal support. For our new listeners who would be interested in joining us, we can be reached at 610-527-2906. Or on the web at inhissign.com.
Welcome back to Souls on Fire. I'm your host, Joe Trainer, along with Andy Criscola. Andy, you've written over 30 songs. You've recorded over 30, and you've written about the same.
Yeah.
What, talk about the difference between, you know, putting pen to paper and writing the song.
Right.
And then coming up with the melody or the flow. Are they, is it interwoven? Is it kind of simultaneous, or do you come up with the prose and the message or the, you said something that kind of captured me, before we started, on the air. You said, the beauty of music, right? Is it just, it focuses the heart.
Yeah.
Speaking to it and coming through it. Like, as opposed to, the shoulders up where we can kind of screw the whole thing up. But, if we talk about the universal church, nothing's a bigger unifier than music, right? I mean, you can kind of, you and I could be different temperaments, talents, and then the commonality that comes through music,
Yeah. Well, it's, especially today, being able to turn your brain off, in a good way and let your heart lead. Let the spirit and, let God talk to you because, that requires quiet. I mean, feel about music the way I feel about being outdoors somewhere. I mean, really outdoors alone, because that's when, you need to just settle and unplug and listen. And music is just, it's a whole different thing. I'll be sitting there and, upset or teed off about this or that and the other thing, and then music comes on, and I, you know, all of a sudden I'm like this, you know, tears are rolling down my face, and I'm like, and the kids are like, oh, Dad, I'm like, leave me alone, you know, but it's just, to me, it just unlocks the whole thing, whatever it is. I mean, you know, I'm sure it's true for everybody, but some people have a process where they start with the words, they start with music. For me, it goes back and forth. You know, often it'll start with some sort of, I'll skip some phrase, and I'm like, okay, that's something. You know, let me start there and start.
Are you, does building. It come to you, like, in spurts? Like, will you be up at, like, 3 in the morning, like, you're sound asleep, and then all of a sudden, like, something comes to you, or you kind of...
It's funny. There was one experience where I was, like, in that, you know, that half sleep in the morning when you're sort of almost awake, but you're not. And I had this song come to me, and it's called Rapunzel. But this, like, I swear, the first two verses just came, I was just dreaming them. And I woke up, and I'm just like, okay, you know, definitely write them down. It was just like that just kind of came to me, and I turned that into something. But, yeah, it's a phrase or whatever, or a thought, or sometimes it's a conscious thought. I want to write a song about this. And then sometimes it's like, you know, I am a sort of I don't say a melancholy guy, but I'm a James Taylor guy.
Sure.
So, you know, sort of, then there are times when I say, all right, I want to write something upbeat. You know, I want to do something that's going to move. So I'll start with something, or, you know, you stumble onto some guitar phrasing or something like that. And I'm like, okay, that's something right there. And there's,
Who is your, and don't take this the wrong way, but
yeah.
Who is your sounding? Is it when Andy thinks it's right and you found the sweet spot, or do you bounce stuff off your kids, your wife, or is it kind of, no, this is like, I'm being true to myself. This, I'm following my heart here. You know, this verse, this melody matches this, period, the end, or you kind of just put feelers out there and kind of troll around a little bit.
So, I write songs for me primarily, you know, I will, you know, if I'm in the studio recording, I'll ask my wife if she thinks if the vocal's good enough, or she's an excellent coming up with alternate melodies and harmony arranger. She's my harmony arranger. She's unbelievable.
Nice.
And so she'll say, right, you could try this or do that, you know. But for the most part, and I'm not a professional songwriter where, you know, you're in there and it's like, no, you know, there's some, like, producers telling you,
yeah,
you got
a gun to your head. Yeah, you need to
but
do
I've,
this.
But I've done some stuff. You know, I've written some songs for, like, you know, like a pharmaceutical client where they're, you know, somebody said, hey, can you write it? It says, we've got this theme that everything's possible, or, you know, nothing's impossible. And can you write us a parody or a jingle? I'm like, I don't do jingles. I don't do parodies. They said, I'll write you a full length song. And so I put it together. And if it's heartfelt, if you're
speaking
really,
to somebody.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing went through. I mean, they changed one or two things, but, you know, and I was shocked because I thought, you know,
big pharma's not
working,
exactly easy.
No, I do that every day, and I'm like, you know, you just want to tear your hair out when the client starts, you know. But they were like, they kind of let it go through. I mean, they made me put in some monoclonal antibody names at the end that I put into a rap, but that came out all right. But,
and you've done some writing for the Special Olympics too, right?
I did a project for our friend Steve McWilliams. Yeah. He's a brilliant documentary filmmaker over there at Villanova, and we would always talk. I'd see him at the gym, and he's like, "You gotta do a song for me. You gotta do this, or you gotta write a score for me." You know, so when I had my knee operation, my double knee, I was I had about 6 weeks where I was just sitting around. It was coming up, and he said, can you do a score for me for this Olympics, Special Olympics film? I said, I don't do scores. I said, but I'll write you a song. He goes, that's perfect. You do a song for the end
credits. This
is
because I'm going to sound ignorant. What is the score?
The score is the music that you hear throughout the film that's just sort of sets the
melody.
Mood. Yeah, tells you when to jump or when to cry or when to laugh. So, I don't have all the gear and everything like that. I go into the studio and just sort of lay it out. So I said, yeah, I'd love to. And, you know, the film was called Gold Medal, spelled M-E-T-T-L-E.
Nice.
And it was featuring, you know, one specific soccer team that participates over here at Villanova at the Special Olympics, and just their stories. And so I started putting it together, and he loved it. And the only feedback that he had for me, he was just like, we had an idea about maybe having the kids come in and sing. There was a choir that was maybe going to do something. So he said, can you write some other part of it? So I did like this anthem piece at the end. That didn't end up happening, but between my my wife and my daughter sing, and we have another friend, our friend Sharon Edelman, she sings, and we put together this overlapping chorus at the end where it's just different parts, and it kind of, you know, it's pretty good.
That's awesome. Have you done any collaboration with your daughters and your wife? Because everyone's kind of, like, that had to be kind of cool, huh?
Oh, all the time. I mean, I lean on my wife, you know, because she, as I said, you know, she's a great singer in her own right. And my daughters are, you know, tremendous singers, and, you know, they're all better than me. I'm all right. I can do my thing, but they're wonderful and, you know, high ranges. And, Izzy and I, when Izzy was a kid, she'd come up with this phrase about, dance like a vampire. So we were just laughing. She kept singing. She was always doing this. So I was in the studio working on a recording, and, you know, we'd just gotten, you know, the setup takes, you know, it takes you an hour to get the mics just, to, sure. You know, you got a mic, right here on the guitar, and there's one in the room and another one over here. And, you know, we had really good sound. I had kind of run through whatever I needed to do. And the guy says to me, do you want to do anything else? I'm like, this guy, Joe Smiley, Red Planet recording anyway. And I said, give me a second. Let me think about it, you know. So I started just in my head, I started putting together verses and a chorus for this song. Isabel had given me some of the words, and I just started putting, I said, all right, we'll do two verses here and then a chorus and a thing and a bridge and a thing. I said, okay, just go ahead, let go. So I just laid down the framework for that and then just built onto it. Anyway, so we did this thing, Dance Like a Vampire. Couple weeks later, I had sent it into Kids Corner on WXPN, you know.
Sure.
And it was like Halloween time, and Joe says to me, did you hear the song last night? I said, what do you mean? He goes, no, they played the song on the radio last night. I said,
that's awesome.
I was like, oh my God.
Was she going crazy?
Yeah, they went crazy. You know, so that was great, you know, hearing that. And then that was 2006. They played it nearly every year for 20 years or whatever.
That's awesome.
It's a little thing, but it's, you know, it's fun.
Are you able to, when you wrestle with the music, and how many, kind of a crazy question, I'm not holding a gun to your head,
but yeah,
how many unfinished songs do you have? Or do you put it, if you're mid song in terms of the creation, do you need, like a writer, do you need to see it to its fruition, or will you just, is it kind of just this fluid process of maybe, you know, blending different experiences? Because like anything, right, when it comes to creativity, sometimes we don't get thrown off the horse like St. Paul did and see the light. Sometimes it's, we have to get hit over the head time and again. But do you feel like, is it hard for you to park songs that were unfinished, or?
I don't do it that much. I don't write probably as much as I should. Just, you know, it comes. I've probably written, you know, 60 songs or something like that. Yeah. And it's there. The Olympic song was one it started with this sort of finger picking thing. And I was like, and it was kind of sitting there. And I was actually going to make it a song about my grandfather, who was a longshoreman, the stevedore, right? This was him.
Gotcha.
But I was like, what am I doing with it? So then I run into Steve. He starts talking to me about the Special Olympics. And I'm like, all right, I'm just going to use that for this. So I write this song and using that sort of thing. And so I was like, okay, that's good. That's, you know, and the thing came out. And I loved it. And it was great. So I put, you know, and I had been doing recordings here and there. This thing's sort of a compilation over a couple of years of you know, maybe 10 recordings that had been done with the family.
Gotcha.
And I was just about done, and I realized, you know, I wanted to call it Stevedore Troubadour. It was just sort of the idea of, you know, the singing longshoreman, because it was about my... And then I realized I didn't have a song about the stevedore at all on there. I didn't have anything about my grandfather. I'm like, oh, no. So then I thought, I'd seen some artists do things where they take a song and they use the same music, and then they change it. So I took the Olympian song, And I said, all right, this was originally, I was going to use it for the stevedore. And I took a section of it, but then I changed all the instruments out. So I brought in mandolin, and there's an awesome harmonica part, my friend of mine, Brian Crooks. And you know, even I don't even recognize it as the other song. There's one place where it's, you know.
Sure.
But it's different. Like, I'm the only one that's singing on it. It's very short. And then it sort of finishes off with this Tiger Rag, which my, you know, my grandfather was, you know, he's this unbelievable, you know, just character. He was, by days he was on the dock. At night he was an unbelievable dancer. He'd be at the Roseland, at Savoy Ballroom.
Sure.
You know, he was single. Had a lot of lady friends. You know, he was, but he was dressed in like, you know,
just to the night.
Yeah, just back $300 suits, but back then they were like $1,000 suits. Sure. You know, and he was and he was in tremendous shape. My father showed me this picture of him one time, and he was just like, you know, you know, the guy was
an Adonis. Yeah,
but you know, a smoker. So at 57, he ended up having a heart attack. Mm. He was down on the docks, and my dad got there in time at the hospital just to have him choke out the words, the stove, which was where he had put, you know, $2,000, his life savings.
Sure.
You know,
I'm not laughing at the experience.
We all
have those types of stories. Yeah.
At that time, $2,000, sure. Probably like $5,000.
No doubt.
But, you know, so I was four or five when he died. And, you know, my memory of him is all just through pictures and videos and just sort of it becomes a thing. But so he's always been this figure. So that's why I wanted to do the song about him. And then it's my father, you know, in his later years and the years before he died. You know, my dad was, you know, he had a strange upbringing because the parents were not around and everything like that. My mother would always be like, oh, you should hug your kids more, you know. And he just didn't have that example.
Sure.
He loved us. He was always doing stuff. He was, and
yeah, it was a different male role too.
Yeah. But I went into the you know, we were all out visiting down there, and he was in the bedroom, and I thought he was sleeping. I go in there, and he's listening to the song, and he's listening. He goes, like, I really like this. This is really good, you know, which for him is like, yeah, you know. So
you've done good, kid.
Well, it was, you know, it's about my grandfather, but I dedicated it to him, you
that's
know,
awesome.
And then he passed like the next year or two. So it was,
that's awesome. Yeah. The bond that comes through music, right?
Absolutely.
And the bond that comes through sports. So we'll talk about that now, yeah. Your other passion. So yeah. Here you are, you moved down to the Philadelphia area, yeah. Right? Rosemont, and, yeah. You know, soon after married, you know, you're involved in the parish, and
yeah.
You know, you start, you know, you have this passion, football guy, Jets guy, can sling the ball around a little bit.
Yeah.
So then you start, you know, you kind of, you get up a men's league, and you kind of get, you know, you kind of go up and down the main line, just like looking for some football challenges. Talk about that with the audience here.
Yeah. I had been living in Weehawken, which was a concrete jungle. And, I had started dating my wife, Beth, before she was my wife. And, I'd come down here and I'd be like, well, this, you know, it's just hill, field after field of rolling green, just beautiful fields, you know, this is awesome, you know.
Sports paradise.
And then looking for somebody to play sports with. And I was in my mid-30s, or no, early 30s, whatever. And, you know, a couple of guys at work that we played softball with, they said, let's play football. And we just started building this every Saturday morning. We're just going to get together. And we started over at Lower Merion High School, and it was a grass field at the time. And, you know, we're out there, and we had a great spring and a great summer, and before long there was, you know, 22 guys out there. And then the fall came, and all of a sudden, you know, the janitor comes out and he's like, get off the field. You're not allowed on this field, you know. So we get kicked off the football field. We went over to the soccer field, kicks us off there, go over to the other field, go behind the school, you know. And then we're just all over the place. We're
up Villanova, and down.
Yeah, all the little fields back in Ardmore, South Park, you know. Finally end up at Tennell up here, you know,
yeah.
Which is, it was great. It was a great time. Things kind of shifted then. Somebody said, let's join a league. Let's go down, you know, we'll go down to the league in Ridley and play down there. And that was a whole different thing called Rough Touch. And it was just like, you know, This guy's, you know, coming out of the bar.
The insurance payments paid up, right?
Just hit you as hard as, you know, it was like, it was two-hand touch, but that wasn't the thing. You know,
taking
you
out
just,
some aggression.
Oh, my God, you know. And I said, the first year we had a, so we said, all right, the name of our team's going to be the Mainline Menace, because that's what we were. We were a menace to the Mainline. And, you know, we played for a couple of years, and you know, four years in, and I'm standing there, you know, one Sunday morning, I'm looking, and there's a guy the size of my little daughter blocking for me, and there's three, you know, linebacker-looking guys, you know.
Trying to salivate.
Yeah, yeah, they're coming in, and they hit me, and my heel hit my butt. They had never met in a long time. And this thing, like, I scream, like, ah, and we thought you were dead, you know, because the thing just was like, oh, my God, it seemed like it exploded. I got up, I kept playing, you sure. know, because that's always a way. And, you know, by the end of the time there, I was just, like, dragging the leg around one, you know. And
sure.
But when it was over, I felt I missed it. I missed the guys. I missed the whole thing. So I thought, I'm going to write a song about it. I'm going to write celebrate the Mainline Menace. So I wrote a song. I did a video. Again, Steve lent me one of his camera guys, and we did a whole cold opening, like we did a takeoff on The Sopranos, where I come out of, because we started in Weehawken, you know.
Nice.
So we come out of the Lincoln Tunnel,
sure.
and I've got a lollipop in my mouth, and, you know, and then we're down here, and we're shooting video all over the place, and... anyway, it was, you know, it's got a lot of hits on YouTube, and it's pretty well received. So.
That's awesome. You know, Saint Pope John Paul II, he really believed in, you know, the platform to bring other people closer to Christ, right? Sports.
Yeah.
You know, two of your passions, you know, sports and music, right?
Yeah.
Nothing, I mean... Once you establish a common bond, like you were talking about, like, you know, as soon as we couldn't, you know, some of the guys on the team got concerned about, we can't invite these people, you know.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
like, oh man, if we can't, you know, if we're losing the point of the competition, right, the healthy the camaraderie that comes with it, you know, it's the same thing with music too. Like, you know, like let's take this isolated activity
right.
and transcend race
right.
and transcend socioeconomic and transcend status, you know, and I mean, I think that's God's call for all of it. You know, if you can, you know, especially now more than ever, right? Because all we're accentuating right now is our differences.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're different than me. You know,
yeah.
you look different. You
yeah.
you believe different. Your party politics are different or you know, and I think to me,
yeah.
when you can celebrate the commonalities.
Yeah.
You know, of our humanity.
Right.
You know, and I don't know if there's anything better than sport and music, right? I mean...
No, that's interesting. And you know, it's been interesting talking with you, you know, leading up to this, too, about the religious part as well, because those, you know... I don't always think of it that way, because it's just been part of it, but, you know, those three things have kind of been the thing that I've, you know, I've
yeah.
revolved my life around
faith, music, and sports.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and the thing about it is, it's like there's a common goal, you know, whether it's to, you know, make a great song or to, you know, compete and win, and, you know, so you're focused on a problem, and that's the problem with it's so adolescent the way that things are right now, because fix the problems. We have enough. There's plenty of work to be done. We don't need to. The name calling and the, you know. I'm an independent guy because I, you know.
Sure.
There's things I don't like extremism because
no.
I don't think there's no answer in
no,
extremism.
No.
You know, if you have to
you're
find
not
a way.
You're bringing people
no,
together there.
Well, nothing's going to happen
no.
if we. You know, look. You know how it is. If you have an argument with your wife and you're too busy telling each other. What's wrong or what's
yeah,
right?
You're not fixing the problem.
Nothing's going to happen. And I say to my kids, my girls, I'm like, look, I know you're girls. I know you got to feel things. I said, all right, but, you know, if you got to fix it. Spend time just solving it, and you're going to feel better, you know. And so.
No doubt. Yeah, I know you're involved in a men's group down at the parish. Talk
yeah.
about that experience, how that's been for you as we wrap things up here in the next
yeah, it's
month.
Thursday morning gospel group started by Craig Knoll, a great guy, and this is about when it started there was maybe five or six guys there, and you know, I don't feel so qualified because I had been in and out just because I'm not a morning person.
Sure.
So 6 o'clock comes, I'm like, I can sleep.
No.
I'm a night owl. I'm up all night.
Yeah,
so like,
still a musician. Come on.
That's what I mean. It's like, you know.
Nobody's recording at 6 a.m. unless they're coming off of the all-nighter.
Yeah.
Right?
I've been doing, but I had streaks where I was there, and I've been doing much better.
How has that impacted your faith?
But there's like the 15 guys, 20 guys there that are part
awesome.
Of that. Yeah.
How has that impacted your faith?
Yeah, it's great to be able to meet with other guys in the same situation, fathers, husbands, sons, caring for older for your parents, and, you know, just challenges, and being able to just talk with somebody else about it. Just bringing, you know, getting a preview of the gospel so that, you know, when you get there Sunday, you know, you've already put some thought time into it. And
amazing how that, like, we do that. I was saying before the show started, I'm involved in this. It's called Old School Men of Faith Group. We meet up at the Shrine of Czestochowa in Doylestown. And, you know, it's been like 3 years running. And when we first, we do a lot of things. We have guest speakers come in. We have testimonies. You have, and then when we start, one of the themes that the founder wanted to kind of build off of was a prelude to Sunday's gospel. So we get together the day before, and I was like, I'm going to hear it again tomorrow. Like, I went in with some, like, you know, as I look back on it, some resistance. And then I'm like, that has had a profound impact on my faith because I'm so much more dialed into, you know, especially when you know, in those younger years when you have kids, like, stop hitting your brother, stop talking, you know, stop, you know, stay awake, you know, you're kind of not, you know, you're doing all this damage control that you kind of miss, you know, the message, and then you miss, you know, the great homily thereafter. But it's been awesome, man. That, like, when I feel so much more engaged on Sundays by doing that. And the other thing about the Living Word is it's like, like, even from Saturday to, we did that this past weekend, from Saturday to Sunday, and we spent an hour, like, you know, kind of talking about the gospel and dissecting it, and then, like, I had, like, a whole new interpretation. I mean, I'm sure it's a little like that with music too, right? Like, you know, you might listen to a song or create a song, and it was bringing out this emotion or this relationship or this breakup or this loss and death. And then, years later or days later, months later, you can go back to the song and it has a whole new meaning for you.
Yeah.
You know, where you're like, oh my gosh, I just, you know, I thought
never
about my, my, yeah.
Never heard that before.
Just
didn't realize that was what it was all about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, and I feel like that with the gospel too, because it's like, you know, what do they say? I think in 4 years, If you go to church, I think it's 4 years. You'll hear every offering in the Bible, and here you are. You know, I'm 54, and you know, I've heard them all a bunch of times.
Yeah.
But like the new and the new interpretations that we're still able to come up with.
Yeah, well, there's just something, you know, it's like, you know, loaves and the fishes, and it's like, but there's one line that comes out at you, and you're like, oh.
Didn't think about that before.
Yeah, that's hit me different.
Absolutely. Andy, this has been awesome. I appreciate being on here. God bless, man. I can't tell you I'm going to root for the Jets now, but this has been amazing. Folks, I appreciate you joining us tonight. God bless. Have a great week. I'm not going to hear you next week. I'm not going to be with you next week. We have Memorial Day holiday. But God bless. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great week.